You're listening to Spellbound.
All right, welcome to episode 45 of Spellbound. I'm Julian Smith. I'm here with Andrew Rader, the fax machine in the house. But before we dive in, I just want to say that today's episode is one part sad and two parts happy because Andrew no longer gets to say, "I'm back" at the beginning of these episodes because he's just going to be back for the remainder of the podcast. What I'm trying to tell you is Andrew is now a part of this podcast. How lucky are we? But we need to change the name of the podcast to make room for him, right? Because, you know, Spellbound is kind of like my personal, it was like just stuff that I was interested in. And Two Damn White Guys has kind of taken on this whole new life of its own where we're kind of, you know, Andrew and I have a lot of similar interests, and so we're kind of exploring them together. Nothing's really going to change that much, except Andrew's just going to be around all the time now, instead of just randomly when you least expect it. Now you know exactly what you're getting. You're getting two damn white guys instead of just one guy who has his one damn white friend on occasionally. So now this show is officially Two Damn White Guys. We're going to get the new artwork rolled out soon and all that good stuff, so keep an eye out for that. And we've also got plans for bringing video to the podcast eventually. Right now, Andrew and I are in different states, so that's going to be a slow train coming, but we have lots of big plans and we're really excited. So, Andrew, welcome. It's nice to have you aboard.
Two's a party.
Two is a party. That's right. It's a pretty lame party when it's just two people. That's why we'll still have guests occasionally, but the whole point of this podcast is just to have fun while we're learning. So I think I'm really excited about this. Today we have some really fun stuff we're going to talk about. We're going to ask the question. It's kind of a thought experiment, really. We're going to ask the question, does the individual matter in history? And we're going to look at three different historical moments and people and ask the question of what would have happened had those people not existed. Would somebody else have come along and done the exact same thing?
Right. So I think we tend to think of big events in history with one person in our mind. I think it's because humans respond to personal stories. We know people also in our brain as kind of a memory device. It's easier to think of one person having a big impact rather than just kind of being product of circumstance. So we're going to talk about three different kind of events in history, and does the individual that's usually associated with them matter, or would they have happened anyway? And we chose three, I don't know, somewhat randomly, but just because also they're kind of big events in history, not necessarily great figures. Some are good and most are bad. First is Columbus and the discovery of America. So, and we can argue about whether he really did discover America, because obviously other people have claim to that title.
Yeah, centuries before.
Right. Maybe even millennia before, right, within Native Americans. So if Columbus hadn't ever existed, would history have unfolded the same way, or would it have been very different? Same thing with the abolition of slavery in the United States. If Abraham Lincoln had never existed, you know, would the Civil War have happened? Would history have unfolded in the same way? And then a third is the rise of fascism in the 1920s and 30s, in particular in Germany and Hitler. If Hitler had never existed, would, you know, the same things have happened? Would World War II have happened? Would there have been a Holocaust and things like that? So how much responsibility can we attribute to the individual versus just the currents of history and the situation and circumstance?
Yeah, that last one, the World War II example and all of the, you know, the Holocaust and everything is an interesting example because the Jews were persecuted all throughout history. And, you know, that wasn't the first time. It was the most recent time. But, you know, that one to me is really interesting. And I don't want to give any spoilers, but we're not getting ahead of ourselves yet. But whereas, like, Abraham Lincoln, it's hard to say. I go back and forth on some of these because some of them seem like, in the case of Abraham Lincoln, it's like, yeah, surely somebody would have come along and abolished slavery by now if it hadn't been for him, because it was just a movement and he was just the person, you know, at the, you know, spearheading it. And so I don't know. I kind of flip flop on some of these, but it is an interesting question. So
yeah, I think for all of them and for everything in history and most things in life, it's kind of a gray area. And this is kind of a philosophical thought experiment that historians do. It's not really yes or no, it's somewhere in between. And it's to what degree did that individual impact history?
Right. Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. And now this may seem like dry subject matter to some of you who just, you know, this, if this seems like schoolwork or something, don't think of it that way. This stuff is it's fascinating. This is everything. This is our story. This is where we came from. And so it's just, I feel like even if you know some of this stuff, it's good to just kind of brush up on it and discuss it. This is the stuff I talk about when I'm bored. Does that make me lame?
Yes.
Maybe everyone. It could be fun. Surely it's not just, I'm not the only one, surely. So which one do you want to pick apart first? Do you have a favorite?
Go chronologically, start with Columbus.
Okay, yeah, that's good. I like that. Let's start with Columbus.
Columbus, obviously, his reputation has suffered over the years, and there's a lot of movement to replace Columbus Day with Native American Day, which is, I think, probably a good thing.
Yeah, obviously, I'm for that.
Pretty horrible. Didn't invent slavery, but obviously...
Partook.
Exactly. Was instrumental in its founding in the Americas. Obviously, the decimation of the Native Americans was as a result of his voyages, ultimately. However, to some extent, that was just the reunification of Europe and the old world and the new world, right? Like the disease thing, most of the Native Americans were killed by disease, and that's kind of an inevitable product of a reunification. Mm-hmm. Now, Columbus did not discover the Americas in many ways, but he'd still had a pretty significant impact. So obviously, the Americas were populated with a lot of people before Columbus arrived. More people in Mexico probably before Columbus than up at any time into history until the 1960s.
Wow.
So a lot of people, thriving civilizations in America before Columbus. Even if we're talking about Europeans, obviously the Vikings reached North America long before Columbus. And even the Native Americans, there's multiple waves. Like the Inuit arrived in North America many thousand years after its initial population, and only about 3,000 or 4,000 years ago. So you could argue that if you're talking about explorers coming from the old world, which is Eurasia and Africa, to the Americas, the Inuit have a much better claim to having discovered America after its initial populating than Columbus.
Yeah. Our money should say, in Inuit we trust, but it doesn't have quite the same ring to it, does it?
Right, right.
First of all, it sounds like you're stuttering.
The reason why I think Columbus is still important, if not a good person, is that his voyage opened the way for lots of other voyages. Mm-hmm. So, and not necessarily in good ways. Obviously, there's both positive and negative effects of the unification of the old world and the new, like horrible effects on the Native Americans, obviously, but, you know, like the United States wouldn't even be here if it wasn't for that. So you could kind of look at it in from multiple ways. I'm not going to talk about judging that, but we're going to talk about just what impact Columbus actually had. Because before Columbus, Europeans didn't regularly sail to the Americas. But after Columbus, for the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years, tons of Europeans came to the Americas in search of a route to Asia still, which was what Columbus was looking for.
Yeah, he wasn't even looking for America. He got to the Bahamas or wherever it was and saw Native Americans and thought they were Indians. And that's why so many people still call them Indians incorrectly.
Yeah, for 350 years, the main objectives of Europeans sailing to the Americas was to try to get around them. They were just an obstacle in the way on the way to Asia.
Right.
They were trying to get to Asia to get spices and silks and porcelains from China and things like that.
An amazing accident. I just discovered America for the third time.
Obviously Columbus made the quote discovery because he was incredibly poor at geography. He dramatically underestimated the size of Earth. He thought that
he almost died
across the ocean just to get to Asia, when in fact it's at least 3 times further than he thought. So even if the Americas didn't exist, it would not be possible to sail directly from Europe to Asia across the ocean because it would have been too far.
Yeah, his geography was so bad, in fact, that his first voyage to what ended up being America, but to Asia, was denied by 3 different continents.
Three different continents?
3 different countries, I mean.
He went to multiple kings, and they all shut him down because their best geographers told them that Columbus was wrong, that it's actually much further than he thought. He actually was basing his calculations on a map from 1474 by Toscanelli, which was an Italian geographer who drew an incorrect map.
Yeah.
And then he also kind of infused his own errors. It was described in miles, but it was using Arabic miles rather than Greek miles. And huh. those are different. So he underestimated on that basis as well.
Oh my gosh.
So basically he eliminated the entire Pacific Ocean in his calculation.
Wow.
But, you know, this actually happens a lot. This is how science and geography advances, is by making errors, because you don't know until you try, right? So even by sailing in gross error, he actually had a huge impact on the world by encouraging others to also sail across the ocean.
He was almost killed so many times because of his miscalculations and things. He was actually, there's a funny story about him. He was stranded in Jamaica in 1504. His whole crew abandoned him and he had no food or anything. And he was trying to get food from the locals in Jamaica and they wouldn't give it to him because they didn't know who he was and he didn't look like them, you know? And he was like, they were like, who is this guy asking for food? And he knew there was going to be a lunar eclipse then, like the very next night, because he knew astronomy. And so he told the local people that they had angered his gods, who were the creators of the world. And his god was going to show his vengeance the next night by turning the moon red. And then the next day, all the locals saw the moon and they gave him like whatever he wanted. They gave him a bunch of food and like stuff.
Wow. I mean, despite being an awful person, he was actually a pretty good navigator. He was pretty skilled. It was really hard to judge course and speed and try to make estimates of position. So he was bad at geography, morally very questionable, but at the same time, he was pretty skilled. So did he matter? Did he make a difference? What do you think?
I think he definitely made a difference. I think he made a lot of good differences and a lot of bad differences. He didn't discover America because people were already there when he got there, but he was one of the first Europeans to get to America, like civilized Europeans.
What he did is cause the Columbian Exchange, which is he brought plants and animals and people and ideas from the old world to the new and from the new world to the old, like tomatoes, potatoes, squash, beans, all these plants that now are all over the world, corn, came from the Americas and wouldn't exist. Like Europe was going through regular famines because it was completely dependent on just wheat. But after potatoes were introduced, that became the staple of European peasants and it prevented famines in Europe and things like that. So, and just transferring ideas, obviously, you know, democracy in the United States wouldn't exist today without someone at least coming across. Now, the question is whether, though, Columbus matters, because obviously the first, there might be another person, right?
Right.
And there were other Europeans that were getting very close to crossing the Atlantic. There was Corto Real, who's Portuguese, and it's questionable whether he actually discovered the Americas before. Europeans had marked on their maps islands in the Atlantic. So it was actually kind of a well-known fact that there was probably land across the ocean in the Atlantic. The only thing that wasn't clear was whether he could sail to Asia across the Atlantic.
But that's not to say they knew about America, right? They might have known about the Bahamas.
Well, they knew that there were probably islands. They definitely didn't know the scope of the continents. That's for sure.
Right.
Now, at what point would people be prompted to sail across anyway? Like Basque fishermen from Spain and France?
Mm-hmm.
Shortly after Columbus, and arguably before Columbus, were actually sailing to the Grand Banks of Newfoundland to catch codfish because they were really abundant there.
Okay.
So it's unclear exactly when the next person would have gone, but it was kind of an imminent event. The Portuguese were exploring down the coast of Africa. They'd actually just reached India. Actually, they reached slightly after Columbus in 1497, but they'd reached the Cape of Good Hope in 1489. So exploration was in the air. There were fishermen who were possibly going to North America already. You know, immediately after Columbus, there were a number of voyages like John Cabot in 1497. So I think someone would have come along and united the continents around the same time. Like it wasn't Columbus.
He was first, but
yeah,
that
the details would be different. But I think it's fair to say that within certainly a century, probably a few decades, the same thing would have happened anyway.
It was a matter of time.
It was probably a matter of time.
So let's jump to Lincoln. he was interesting because he abolished slavery, but he was also very conflicted about, you know, the immigration implications of all the freed slaves and whether or not they should be allowed to stay in America or whether they should be sent back to their homes in Africa. And as far as I know, there was no consideration to the freed slaves, like what they wanted. I think they were just like trying to decide what to do with them.
Yeah. I mean, people are a product of their times, and Lincoln obviously was very important in abolishing slavery, but, you know, by today's standard, he would have been considered very racist.
Right. But so, back then, he was progressive.
Right, exactly. You can't really judge people by our current standards, I think. Not totally, at least. You have to judge them in the context of when they lived.
Right, 100%. That's not to say that we're defending that position on his part, but we're just explaining it.
So the question is whether or when slavery would have been abolished or a civil war may have happened without Lincoln. It's actually really clear that the election of Lincoln specifically in 1860 did trigger the secession of these states. Lincoln did not appear on the ballot in most southern states because they were so afraid of him, because his platform, like the ideas he ran on, was to prevent further spread of slavery. He did not actually run on abolishing slavery, but he did run on restricting slavery in any future territories that would be added to the Union. So there was a lot of debate. Kansas was just being added. Colorado was soon. All the Western states were being added. And the question was, would they be free states or slave states? Because there wasn't slavery in about half the United States, in the northern half, but there was slavery in the South. So Lincoln ran on preventing the further spread of slavery. The South feared that if you prevent the further spread, that means that there's not going to be any new slave states, so they're going to lose all their power in Congress, basically.
Right.
And he that was would also open the way to the abolition of slavery.
Right.
So on the election of Lincoln, this is what actually prompted the secession of states, starting with South Carolina, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mississippi, Alabama, so the Deep South started to secede. Now, it still wasn't clear there was going to be a civil war. There were actually a lot of efforts to try to mediate between the North and South before the Civil War. Ultimately, you could argue whether the Civil War was a good thing or a bad thing. It killed 600,000 people. It was a calamity to the United States, but it also triggered the immediate end of slavery. So, you know, you can look at that on either side.
I mean, just think of the kind of people that would have slaves. They're probably really violent people. Like, I'm sure that the people up north didn't really want a war. I'm sure the South really wanted the war. And, you know, the North was, I mean, they were both attacking each other. I'm not trying to say
the South didn't want a war at all, actually. The South wanted to quietly back away. It was the North.
Well, they wanted to quietly keep their slavery.
Right, exactly. They just wanted out to keep their slavery, basically. And the North, the South did trigger the war, actually, by trying to remove the troops from Charleston, Fort Sumter. So the South did fire first, but it was unclear that there was actually going to be a war over it. So you could say it was kind of both sides in terms of the actual war. But the federal government deployed troops to federal installations in the South, in particular Fort Sumter, but there were other ones as well. And the South fired on Fort Sumter to try to remove the federal troops from their territory.
Huh.
I think there was a little bit of war fever on both sides, but basically it was unclear just with secession whether there would be necessarily a war. I guess in the context of this debate, I'm really questioning what was Lincoln's role? Like, would this have happened without Lincoln? And I think the answer is no, but
well, slavery would have been abolished.
Yeah, I agree. But the question is what time frame and what mechanism.
Yeah.
Like it may have lasted a little longer, but maybe there wouldn't have been a war. That's kind of unclear. Or maybe there would have been a war. Because
so you're saying Abraham Lincoln, he was the one behind the war.
No, I mean, in all these cases, you can't ascribe responsibility to any one person. There was lots of people involved.
Right. It was a movement.
Yeah. Well, abolitionism was definitely a movement. But what role does the individual have in actually bringing out those events? And I think in the case of the Civil War, maybe the strongest case could be made that Lincoln was instrumental in bringing out those events. But similar events may have unfolded without Lincoln. You know, eventually it might have been another election cycle, might have been another 5 or 10 years, but probably something similar would have happened because there were a lot of forces in place. There was a strong abolitionist movement in the North, and obviously the South was trying to keep their slaves, so it's unclear how long that standoff would have lasted. I mean, there was already a lot of events around that, like John Brown led a militia down to try to free the slaves in the 1850s and was arrested and killed. There was fighting in Kansas by pro-slavery and anti-slavery people kind of entering the state to try to turn it to their side. So the country was already, you know, fighting over this, but it wasn't a full-scale war. So how it would have happened, it's a little bit unclear, but I think some kind of standoff was definitely inevitable.
Maybe there would have been less dead people if there wasn't a civil war.
Well, that is an obvious statement, but it's not clear that that necessarily would have been better, because maybe it would have been drawn out and
that's true.
Worse in some way.
Yeah, so you're saying it's more efficient to kill people sometimes.
definitely not advocating.
Are you pro the death sentence?
No.
I'm joking. This is not related, but it's like half related, I'd say. While we're on Lincoln, are you familiar with the Lincoln, they call it the Lincoln-Kennedy coincidences? Are you familiar with this?
Oh, yeah, I'm familiar with this, yeah.
Can I read some of these? They're amazing. Yeah, yeah. Okay, both Lincoln and Kennedy were shot in the head on a Friday. These are all facts. I'm just reading these here. Yep. Lincoln and Kennedy were elected to Congress 100 years apart. Lincoln was elected in 1846. Kennedy was elected in 1946. Both men's successors were named Johnson. Lincoln's was Andrew Johnson, and Kennedy's was Lyndon Johnson. Both men were assassinated by men who were known by three names. Lincoln was assassinated by John Wilkes Booth. Yeah. And Kennedy was assassinated by Lee Harvey Oswald. The names Lincoln and Kennedy both contain 7 letters. The names of their assassins contain 15 letters. Lincoln was shot in a theater named Ford. Kennedy was shot in a car, a Lincoln, made by Ford.
That's cool.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, though, there's billions of events that happen all the time, and we're cherry picking from hindsight, right? That's why we can derive all these coincidences. We could do the same thing with any other set of presidents, except they might not happen to have those coincidences. That is an impressive list. There's no doubt, but it doesn't mean anything mystical.
So that was irrelevant, but fun. So let's move on to Hitler, shall we?
All right, if you insist.
He's third on our list, Hitler. Would the Holocaust have happened if it weren't for Hitler?
So the rise of fascism. So Mussolini preceded Hitler. He came to power in 1923, 1924 in Italy. Francisco Franco and Salazar came to power in Spain and Portugal. Germany was going through economic hard times from the Depression and massive hyperinflation that many Germans at least blamed on the Treaty of Versailles. So in a sense, the ground was ripe for a fascist leader. Mm-hmm. Did that fascist leader have to be Hitler? Absolutely not. Hitler was in a sense created by certain people. Like one of his early supporters was a wealthy businessman named Eckhart, who kind of recruited him. Hitler did not found the Nazi Party, for example. He was recruited to it.
Oh, really?
Early in the days. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so he was kind of recruited as a figurehead spokesperson who could speak to the people, and then he kind of ran with it and eventually kind of took over the party and excluded a lot of the previous people.
Crazy.
Yeah, but he was a very early member, and he was definitely its public face from the start. So the question is whether the Nazi Party still would have won. I think that's highly unlikely. Because the Nazi Party tried to organize the Beer Hall Putsch, it's called, in 1924, where they tried to take over the government of Bavaria and then march on Berlin and basically overthrow the government of Germany. Germany, after the war, by the way, had a democratically elected government, but it was kind of weak. It was considered weak by Germans. It was considered a bit of a puppet of the Allies after the war, after the First World War. Germany had lost a lot of territory, and there was a lot of grievances. So the kind of situation, the circumstance was ripe for someone to come along promising massive change and promising the world and also having a lot of hatred and bile, right? Mm-hmm. As you said, anti-Semitism was obviously huge in Europe before Hitler, before the Nazis. So they exploited that. They exploited victim mentality after the war. So the Nazi Party almost died after this putsch in 1924, I think it was, the Beer Hall putsch in Munich. Hitler was arrested. Ernst Röhm, his head of the SA, the kind of militia, was arrested. Hermann Göring fled to Austria. And it almost died there. But Hitler, at his trial, argued and became like front page news for the entire world. He was completely unknown until he actually was arrested.
Wow.
And was in prison. And so he became famous because he went to prison. And that's where he wrote his book, Mein Kampf. And he became sort of well-known after that. And then they decided that they couldn't seize power through force. And instead, they decided to get elected.
Wow.
So the next three elections, they gradually kind of rose in popular support. And eventually, I don't think they ever won a majority, but they won a significant fraction of German votes.
Did you know Hitler was an art student as a kid?
Yeah, for sure.
He wasn't very good, and his work wasn't appreciated. And I've heard the question asked if maybe that was like the beginning of his angst, you know.
If he had just been given an opportunity in art or whatever, if he was a little better artist, then the world might have been very different. Exactly, yeah. And he almost got shot during the putsch too, so that would have been a lot better. But how much difference did Hitler make? Obviously, we consider him to be the face of evil, and indeed he was. But would someone else have come along who was similar? I mean, there were a lot of other henchmen in the Nazi Party who could have done similar things. The thing that made Hitler unique was, I guess, his oratory. Like, he was a speaker who, for whatever reason, in that time and circumstance, actually had a huge following.
Right.
Like, in a really evil way, but he had a huge following. And that's what made him unique, and that's what ultimately kind of gave him power. So I think that circumstance played a huge role. If he wasn't around at that particular time, in that particular situation, he basically gained power during the Great Depression, when a lot of people felt like there was no path forward, and they just wanted kind of to upset the system.
Yeah.
So,
like Trump.
He was definitely an individual who was important, but also a product of the times. And it's unclear whether someone else might have come along. Now, obviously, the details would be different.
Well, people had come along before that. I mean, Israel was persecuted by ancient Egypt, by Babylon, by Assyria. You know, lots of people were. I think it's because the Jews were, from the start, they were like a wandering people. They would, you know, they would settle it. They were mainly in Israel, obviously, but they expanded all over the place, and they were very powerful for a long time. And so I think maybe a lot of people saw them as like a threat or something.
Well, obviously there was tons of anti-Semitism, but I guess I'm questioning whether another leader of Germany who came along would have done similar things in a war. Right. And I think to some extent the answer is yes, but the details definitely would have been different, because there was still a lot of militarism in Germany. Germany felt, rightly or wrongly, like it was victimized by the Treaty of Versailles. I mean, similar thing happened in other countries like Hungary, where fascist leaders came along. Now, they might not have been as extreme as Hitler, so they might not have resulted in the war when it did. Might not. Actually, one of the things about Hitler is he was very successful early on at duping the Allies. And like when he remilitarized the Rhineland in 1936, the Allies could have stopped him right there, just stopped the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But they didn't. And he gambled a lot, and he happened to win a lot of his early gambles. And that's what made him as successful as he was for as long as he was. So, Wow. Yeah, certainly the details would have been different. Maybe it would have been a lesser dictator, but I think the situation was somewhat rife for dictatorship at that time in Germany. Doesn't mean it had to play out that way. Maybe democracy could have won the day, but.
Well, he's, you know, I obviously didn't know the guy, but he seemed like he must have had some like psychological insight into people or something, because, you know, one commentary I've heard on him repeatedly is that he created a feedback loop for the people at the time, like just telling them what they wanted to hear. So he was like, you know, you could say pretending to have the answers to their problem. And then when he actually, maybe what happened is when he actually rose to power because people liked what he was saying, he realized that he didn't really have the answers. So he just took an easy path out, which was just to demonize an entire group of immigrants that were coming in, you know?
Yeah, but he was anti-Semitic from the start. But I think that's definitely true that he kind of told the people what they wanted to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. Not to say that he became
not everyone, of course. Yeah. I don't think he ever even won a majority, but a large segment of the population. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's, I'm not saying that to say that he became anti-Semitic because he had nothing else to, no other stance. But I guess what I'm saying is that's what happens when you just tell people what they want to hear and then you have nothing to back it up with.
Well, he played that card because it was a popular card to be played.
Yeah. Yeah, it was unfortunately popular. Also, if Hitler's father hadn't changed his name in 1877, Hitler's name would have been Adolf Schickelgruber. Yep.
Yeah.
Which is a much more soft, bouncy sounding name.
Really? Schickelgruber? It sounds kind of harsh. Well, Hitler sounds really harsh, but yeah.
Yeah, Adolf Hitler just sounds hard, and Schickelgruber sounds like, Schickelgruber sounds like a kid's show or something. Ah, Dad, I want to watch Schickelgruber.
Not to me. It sounds kind of like sickle, like hammer and sickle, which sounds like pretty harsh too.
Sounds like a euphemism.
So anyway, I think the details would have been different, and possibly the whole thing would have been different in terms of the war. Holocaust probably would have been different. May not have happened. But the situation was kind of ripe for fascism, at least, for the rise of fascism, because we see that in other countries at the same time, even in Hungary, in Spain, in Portugal, in Italy. In fact, in 1941, I believe there were 7 democracies in the world.
Wow.
That was the low point of democracy. 1941, 7 democracies in the world. Now that I think there's over 100.
I think it's hard for people to get their heads around what a situation like the Holocaust, and I'm not implying that it should be like a palatable situation in our minds or something, but when you remember that some of this antipathy has been going on since very early history when things were much more violent and things were much more, you know, people were much, much more racist against each other and stuff like that. So I think a lot of this stuff is dying out now, which is great, but it makes it harder for a lot of people to contextualize it and to say like, okay, this was a person who just like was a product of their time and then went crazy and led a bunch of people the wrong way. You know,
I don't think he was totally a product of his time. I think it's a mix. I don't know if it's even 50-50. It's sort of a gray area, whether he was a product of his time or an individual who just had really bad ideas.
Well, I think we're all a product of our time to an extent.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think this is just kind of a philosophical question. How much does the individual matter? Mm-hmm. Obviously, the answer is somewhat.
Yeah.
Matters a little. How much do they matter, though?
I guess it matters because if you're the first person to something, then you go down in history as the person who was first to do that thing.
Yeah, that's true.
So the individual only really matters for history's sake, maybe.
Yeah, it's easy to remember, obviously.
It's like that one did that thing.
Yeah, one of the things that's really scary about the Holocaust is how many people were involved. It's not just like Hitler killing Jews. I mean, he personally did not actually do that. He obviously was aware of it and ordered the killings and to some extent, things like that. But it was carried out by a whole bureaucracy of murder. There were thousands of people complicit in this, right? So, you know, it takes a lot of individuals to do something big, even if that big thing happens to be horrible.
Yeah, all of these three examples were movements of some kind or another. And, you know, there was one person that kind of is put at the helm of it in our minds because of history and the way it's written. But, you know, all of these things were movements of lots and lots of people.
Right. I think that's the takeaway. Yeah. Lots of people are involved in events of history. I think Columbus maybe is to some extent an exception because it was a small group of 3 ships, right?
Yeah.
And he was the captain. But in many cases, yeah, lots of people are involved in movements. We tend to remember the main figures, but it often is not that simple.
So then the individual does matter because movements are made up of individuals who are making decisions. And so, you know, it matters that we're all up and up on stuff and, you know, that we're making good decisions.
Absolutely. Yeah. The collective assembly of individuals definitely matters. The question is, does a single individual matter? And the answer is...
In a historical sense.
Yeah, in a historical sense. The answer is sometimes. I mean, to some extent.
Yeah, sometimes.
It's not...
Occasionally.
Totally clear. Yeah.
One more fun fact about the Nazi party before we wind this down.
Oh my gosh.
The Nazi party tried to turn Christmas into a non-religious holiday celebrating the coming of Hitler, with St. Nicholas replaced by Odin, the solstice man, and swastikas on top of Christmas trees.
Yeah, they actually had swastikas on Christmas trees.
Which is insane. Well, the swastika was also, it was the Indian sign of peace back in like 6,000 BCE or something like that.
It's actually common around the world. It used to be Navajo blankets. Obviously from India, there was lots of symbology with swastikas and stuff like that. They definitely usurped it.
Usurped it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening. This has been Spellbound, which will henceforth be known as Two Damn White Guys. I'm super excited about it. If you want to tweet us, you can do that. I'm at Julian Was Here on Twitter. Andrew is at Mars Raider. Andrew's a lot more active on social media than I am, so if you need a quick response, tweet him first, or tweet both of us. Consider subscribing for automatic downloads. And if you want to really help us out, you can leave a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts. That is super helpful. We love you for it, and we'll see you next Monday. Have a great week.